It is 8:35 on this Monday morning. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and on A Public Affair this morning, we turn to soil and the potential that soil can play in mitigating the impacts of climate change. More and more farmers are becoming aware of this. Of course, farmers are always aware of the need for a healthy soil. But we're going to talk about really what soil has in terms of its potential around climate change, water conservation and other environmental issues. I have two guests in the studio. One of them is a familiar voice already to our KGNU listeners, as Rod Bruski is not only a local farmer, but he's also a KGNU news host who's with us every other Thursday morning. Thanks for coming in on your off day, Rod.
You bet, Maeve. Thanks for having us.
Also joining us, we have Clark Harshbarger. And Clark is a resource soil scientist with the USDA NRCS. That's the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Research Center. What's the...
Resource Conservation Service.
Resource Conservation Service. And that's in Greeley. And we appreciate him coming in because he's a big, big expert in soil issues. So thank you and welcome, Clark. We're going to start by hearing some audio from an event that happened, I believe it was last Thursday, at the Altona Grange.
Yeah, it's an ongoing series that was put on, and it's called Mad Agriculture, and it's to bring the community together, farmers, scientists, and the amazing part about that event, Maeve, was the other night when we were there, the first Mad presentation, there was only about 15 or 20 people, and on Thursday night, there was over 50 people, and probably 10 or 11 scientists like Clark. And that's when I talked to Clark and said, hey, do you want to come on the air and talk about soil? So,
well, let's hear a little bit of that. And we'll hear first from the organizer, Philip Taylor. This is from last Thursday's Mad Agriculture event that happened at the Altona Grange.
Yeah, Philip Taylor here, founder of Mad Agriculture. Super excited about really revitalizing the Grange. The Altona Grange has been here since 1891. It's not seen a lot of use in the last few decades, and I think it's high time that the community organizes and stands up against industrial corporate monopolies. And we saw that in tonight's showing. A lot of people are interested in supporting local agriculture, driving the change from the ground up, building healthy soils that are carbon rich and full of life. So it was amazing.
Well, there was a lot of people involved in Boulder County and far as slow food movement goes. A lot of the better known organic farmers were here and just a lot of researchers. It's amazing how many scientists were here.
Yeah, there was...
including yourself.
That's true. Yeah. I've left my academic track to do some practical work. But yeah, it's true. I mean, there was good representation from CU Boulder, from CSU. There were some of the best farmers in the region here. There was a great cohort of active citizens who were interested in this. I'm really excited to see where this group goes. I think we could help shape policy and hopefully empower the farmers that are doing the good work on the ground.
Well, there were some farmers from eastern Colorado, and they said that they were working with you on like a perennial grain called Kernza, which I don't think a lot of people know about, which is a perennial wheat that you don't have to harvest. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can, yeah. So I've got perennial wheat. Perennial wheat is rare. There's only one species available to humans. It's just recently been domesticated. Most of our wheat varieties are annual, require tillage, synthetic inputs, water. The perennial grain is perhaps the biggest thing to happen in 10,000 years of agriculture. It's a grain staple crop that can be planted with alfalfa and clover. It's a multiple-use project, and I'm planting some in Hudson, Colorado, in Black Cat Farm here in Boulder, two farms in the Roaring Fork Valley. And yeah, it's an amazing crop because of its perenniality. No tillage is required, no water, no fertilizer.
That's Philip Taylor at the Mad Agriculture event that happened at the Altona Grange in Boulder County last Thursday. Speaking there with KGNU's Rod Bruski. And Rod joins us in the studio in his capacity as someone who is reporting on this issue, but also as a farmer as well. Also joining us, we have Clark Harshbarger, who's a resource soil scientist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resource Conservation Service. That's in Greeley, Colorado. We're talking about soil health this morning and really how it spans so much more than just just the produce that it grows, it has a potential for climate change mitigation, also for water resource and conservation. Well, Rod, you have two bags of, I think it's soil. I'm not an expert in this by any means. So tell us exactly what you have in the studio. We will be posting photos on KG News Instagram page so people get a sense. But as we're talking about soil, you've brought some in.
Well, you know, this is a really good way to explain to people because, you know, when you can look side by side of two different types of soil, you know, in the one bag we have, and I can't take any credit for this. I have to, you know, give all the credit to my wife and her collaboration with Mother Nature to create a really good, rich, regenerative soil, which, you know, you can kind of see what we started out with in the other bag. And again, back to like H2 Radio, you can see I dug it up last night, but you can still see how the condensation and the moisture is in there. And I'm going to hand this over to Clark so he can kind of describe what, okay. he sees there. You know, I mean, he is the soil expert.
But let me just give a description out to our listeners. There are two bags of soil. One of them is kind of a before and after. The before, it looks very clay-like. It's very dry. It looks more like dirt, not looking that it doesn't look like something would grow in that. But this other bag that you've brought in, Rod, it looks healthy. It looks like it's retained a lot of moisture. Clark, what is the difference between the two soils? And then we'll hear how Rod got from the before and the after and the potential to really rejuvenate soil here locally.
Well, when we look at soils, they tell a story. When we go into our forest or we go out to our prairie lands, they tell a long story of a history of the ecological history of the plants and the forest relationships. What Rod's done here is he's told a more recent story. He's told the story of our management and our intention with the land. The soil that Rod brought in that he's been managing has small aggregates. So when I work with kids, I use a very simple concept. I say, your five senses and our soils. So we go through those five senses, and frankly, it works very well with adults. You know, when you see a healthy soil, it's to me, and with the children, it's very obvious. It smells good. It's soft to touch. It has a beautiful dark black rich color. Some people even call it black gold. And so the soil that Rob was comparing his to has these larger shapes that we call blocky structure. And so when you're managing soil for soil health, you're really trying to develop a granular structure, which is the technical term, but a lot of our farmers or producers will just call it crumbly or a cottage cheese type structure. And that reason that is because we want to drink up the water as fast as we can when we have rain events because they're so few and far between here in Colorado.
So, Rod, how did you get from this dry, non-fertile-looking soil to this wonderful bag of black gold, as Clark described it, which even to me, as a layperson who knows nothing about this, looks healthy, it looks fertile, it looks appealing. How did you get from there?
Well, the really wonderful thing about how my wife went around to doing this, because, again, I have to put all the credit to her and Mother Nature, is, we collaborated with some local tree arborists and some landscaping companies using their waste of like their leaves and stuff like that. And this is one of those things where the community can collaborate together. You know, they normally have to pay to dump this organic matter into the landfills, which eventually it off-gasses CO2 and we don't need any more of that. So we were able to get copious quantities of this, and through the labors of my wife, we spread it out into our rows and across our soil, because that's what we want to do, is we want to be able to retain moisture and everything like that. And as you can see, that bag just has lots of moisture still in. We haven't done any irrigating or anything like that. We use drip irrigation, but we're holding moisture in the soil. And I know on H2O Radio, we're talking about the management of water. And if we did this on thousands and thousands of acres, the amount of water that would be required to grow crops would really be reduced by quite a bit, in my opinion.
Well, we're going to get the scientific opinion now from Clark Hirschberger in just a sec. But just to let people know, Rod is referring to an H2O Radio story that we broadcast in the last couple of weeks that shows that young farmers, particularly in Colorado, are paying attention to soil. And in fact, a big survey that was done of young farmers in the Rocky Mountain West identified soil as the number one priority that they were focusing on many issues, climate change mitigation, but also water issues as well. So, Clark, what are we looking at? I mean, a lot of times we can talk about these things as this is going to save the world. But really, what is the potential of soil here?
Well, the beauty of it, Maeve, is there's more than one solution. And that's why we encourage what we call a soil health management system. And it's been said that the principles are few, but the methods are millions. And so the way that Rod comes about healing his soil and bringing it to a higher functionality, which is, you know, the same as soil health, is how well a soil is functioning. It can be reached many ways with the actual methods, but the principles are few. And so I'd like to just say a little bit about those principles. The first principle is to minimize the disturbance of the soil. That doesn't mean no disturbance. It just means to minimize it. And that's the reducage of tillage, the reducage of chemical inputs, anything that we can do to minimize that disturbance, because we can have both physical disturbance and chemical disturbance in our soils.
You know, we just heard about a wheat that's being grown that really minimizes or completely eliminates the need for tillage or harvesting. So is that the type of thing that you're talking about?
It's the beauty of it. It's one practice that we can do to help improve our soils. The next one is to armor the soil. So the Natural Resource Conservation Service has been talking about residue management for almost 80 years now. And this is still a true principle. What that residue does is it provides an armor as the rain and the hail and the snow come down. It actually protects the soil from that physical impact.
So what exactly is that? Is that like growing cover crops to protect the soil when it's not being used to grow crops?
That's right. It's leaving some for the soil with the intention. Our soils are alive. So what the residue does is it actually provides a food source for parts of the soil food web. Some of the soil food web needs living energy. Those are exudates, which are chemicals that plants release into the soils to feed them. But then others actually feed on dead plant materials, like some fungal groups and bigger, larger earthworms and macro arthropods and things like that. So it's basically a food source. It's a double purpose, and it also protects the soil from the rain impacts. The next principle is to actually keep a living skin. So our principles of soil health are based on nature. We've looked to nature, and we're trying to mimic nature with our farming practices as much as possible to still maintain an economic viability, but also an ecologic and a sociological relationship with our community, with our ecological systems. And then still, we want our farmers to survive, and we want our farmers to do well. They're such an important part of our community, and we cherish them.
Well, could you give us an example of what that maintaining a skin might be?
The maintaining the skin is actually using the practice of cover crops.
So that is the cover crop.
Yeah. And so I worked with an amazing scientist, Dr. Rick Haney from Temple, Texas. He's a doctor. He's come up with the Haney test. It's a very common way that a lot of our progressive farmers are using to actually test the soils. So we're using many different ways to actually look at our soils and see how they're actually functioning, besides some of the traditional agronomic ways that we as an agency promoted for many years. But we've learned, and we're willing to keep learning. And so Dr. Rick Haney's wife, she said to him once, Rick, we have to keep this simple. Let's just say the plants fix dirt. And so that's what the living skin is these plants will actually go into the soils and create new pores. And then those pores create habitats, and they create air exchange for the plants and the soils to have this interface that you can clearly see in the two soils here, which one those would be thriving in. And that's going to be the ones that are, have more air spaces in them versus the ones that have compaction with the tillage. They begin to shrink. And so there's a real simple couple properties that we measure, bulk density and water infiltration, that are very well tell a clear story on how that's happening in our soils. And so we've set out some projects here in Boulder County on Boulder County open space land. Just this summer, we sampled 7 soils, and we looked at all the traditional ways that we've sampled soils through and we also looked at a new way called dynamic soil properties. So we're actually going to look at how these soils are going to change over time based on the management decisions that we choose to put out there. Getting back to the Kearns, the diversity is also another principle. So the reason we want diversity is to build resilience in your economic system. So we don't just sell one thing, but you also can provide a different chemical profile for the soil food web. So each one of these plants that we plant, the cover crops, like say an American vetch or a sorghum sedan grass, so we have warm season grasses and cool season and broadleafs that are warm season and cool season, they all have different architectures below the ground and they create different pathways. I like to talk about it like when you're going into Denver, if we just had I-25 going down there, it would be blocked up and it wouldn't function very well. But by having the bypasses and the smaller roads and frontage roads and exit ramps and all these different integrated ways, that's how the soils work. We need lots of shapes and sizes within our soils for the habitat and for water and air exchange to be functioning at its highest level. And so that's why the diversity in the system is also important.
And then I think there's one more principle for healthy soils.
Well, yeah. And the last one I like to do is incorporate livestock. And I know this is a big issue here in the Front Range. We do a lot of irrigated farmers, and we've kind of separated the farmers that raise crops and then the farmers that raise livestock. And one of the beautiful things about soil health is trying to build partnership with different land managers and different farmers to actually bring those two back together. Our climate is semi-arid. I mean, we're very close to being a desert. Some people even call us, you know, a steppe or a high desert steppe. And what the animals did through all of time, you know, before we civilized here, is they actually carried the water from the creeks and the watering holes out across the land. Their stomachs, they have a wet gut. And so they can distribute it through urine, through dung, through saliva, through secretion, through nursing their young. And they're amazing. And they've been part of this ecology for thousands of years. And so within the last 100 years, we've removed them from much of this land. So I really think they're a vital part of cycling the nutrients, transporting some of the water across the land, especially during drier times when the irrigation turns off. So right now, many of our farmers aren't irrigating anymore, but we've had 60, 70 degree days. This is an opportunity to harvest the sunlight, turn it into energy through the form of liquid carbon, and put that back into our soils to actually sequester some of this carbon. And so that's how soils can affect some of this carbon mitigation, is by taking opportunities to harvest the energy from the sun through the plants and then put it back through the roots into our soils.
Just to touch on the livestock issue as well, I know a lot of research has been done in Colorado on the impact that the animals make just by traversing the terrain, because they stir up soil. Now, that might go against one of your earlier principles, which is leave soil alone.
It's minimized disturbance. Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. I personally work, and then the NRCS has a partnership with the Savory Institute. They're right here in Boulder. And so they attest to using tools in their grazing systems. And so one of the tools is to cause a little disturbance, to break some of the capping that occurs, but then to have a proper rest and recovery period. So when you use the livestock, it has to be a very intelligent design. The water placement has to be distributed. The fencing has to be distributed. And so we're working with local farmers and seeing some of these systems take hold here in Boulder County. It's really exciting.
That's Clark Harshbarger. He's a resource soil scientist with the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service in Greeley. He's joining us in the studio this morning as we talk about black gold, healthy soil, and really how it impacts so many of us beyond agriculture. As we're hearing, it has a real potential with climate change mitigation. Also joining us, Rod Bruski, who's also, in addition to being a KGNU news host, he's a farmer as well. And he brought in two samples of soil, one healthy and one not so healthy. And he shared how he got from the not healthy to the healthy soil. How long was that process, Rod? How long did it take?
Well, it's a never-ending process, but, our little farmstead, our soil started as in the bag one, was about 5 years ago, and in the last 3 years is when we really started intensely putting in a lot of organic inputs, and it's really made a change. And I know one thing that I wanted to touch with and ask Clark this question is, I know a lot of people don't have heard about biochar, and you know, for the listeners, Clark, can you explain how biochar works and, you know, the pros and cons about that?
And first of all, say what it is.
Well, yeah, I want him to explain since he's the expert. I'm far from that. And then I have a follow-up question for him after that. So,
yeah, so biochar is a process where a carbon source, typically wood, is the most common resource that's used, is heated under a process called pyrolysis. And it means that it's an extremely hot environment, up to 700 degrees, I believe, Fahrenheit, but with low oxygen. And so the actual carbon structures are retained in this process, but all of the life and a lot of the mass is still incinerated. And so you're left with a very similar product to charcoal, but there is no life in the biochar. And so what biochar, as a soil amendment, it's just one of many things that we can use locally with the beetle kill and then with some of the riparian areas undergoing some flood damage to use a product to redistribute that carbon back onto the soil. But the thing, you know, we've talked about biochar is that the biochar itself is the house. So it's not the food for the microbes. It can hold ions, cations specifically, that are nutrients, but the microbes actually need living food. And so that's why it's so important to charge the biochar with a compost or a compost tea, or to actually get plants growing as soon as possible, because the microbes need a food source. So the house is great, but you have to talk about the food as well. And that's where the science has really changed. We used to always talk about organic matter, and organic matter is an extremely important property to test for your soil, but it's not the whole story. There's actually fractions within the organic matter that we're now looking at. Some people call it the labile fraction or the active fraction, and that's the part of the carbon that's actually digestible by the soil microbes, and it turns over in the matter of minutes in our soils. So we've been very hesitant to try to quantify it, but it's a property that we're no longer ignoring. And so we're looking at farmers all across Boulder County and using the Solvita test, which basically captures CO2 respiration, is how much gas is actually leaking from our soils. So that gets back to keeping the living root, is we want plants to be on top of the soil. So when our soils are leaking the CO2, the plants are covering them and capturing it.
So anyway, I know that Clark, when Thursday night, he said something to me that was so profound about the mentality or the thought process of our industrial agriculture system. And I think Clark really said it in great words. I'm going to let Clark talk about how it just has to be a big mind change.
Yeah. And well, first I want to say the reason I've learned about this is through the NRCS's campaign, Unlock the Secrets of the Soil. And this was actually a farmer-driven campaign. This isn't from land-grant universities. This isn't from the USDA federal government. This is actually a grassroots movement that the farmers are leading all across the country. So here in Colorado, we have a Farming Evolution Conference in Holyoke in February. We have the Colorado Conservation Tillers Association. And here, right here in Longmont on December 14th, we're going to have our second Soil Revolution Conference. And so it's getting farmers in front of other farmers and showing them how they've actually been able to achieve this. And so at one of these conferences, I've gone to them all over the country and just been so inspired by the hope and the willingness for farmers to adapt new systems, is to actually have a complete brain swap. This was the farmer's usage of words. You know, he said, everything I ever knew about farming, I had to let go of and think of it differently. And it doesn't mean that our forefathers and our professors were wrong or right. It's just that now we've learned more and we're beginning to think about soils as being alive. And so every choice we make to affect our soils is going to have a cause and effect. And so that's the beauty of it.
Well, we are going to do more coverage as we get closer to that Soil Revolution Conference happening December 14th
right here in
Longmont. And we'll have more reports on that. And I'm afraid we're out of time, but we are going to continue this discussion in future shows because there is so much to talk about. And one last note I would like you to just maybe touch on. For those who aren't farmers, what can the wider community do to support these efforts around soil health? Because farmers can't do this on their own. Rod, as a farmer.
Well, first of all, I would highly recommend anybody in our community to get involved with MAD Agriculture, because that, you know, there was so many diversified people from different walks of life that were involved, and it's everybody putting their mind together and creating a community of how we can create this change. And that was really important. And the biggest thing I can say is, you know, there's so many people that need to just go out and support your local farmers. You know, go out, talk to Boulder County Farmers Market if you're looking to source local produce, and support those people that are doing regenerative farming. You know, it's a tough road to toe, so to speak. And without the support of our community, you know, we can't do it.
I mean, last words, Clara.
I would just say, educate yourself so that your values and your beliefs are reflected in your actions. And so that is by meeting your farmer, shaking their hand, taking a farm visit, saying, hey, can I come out and see where my food comes from? And almost every farmer I've ever met would love to have you out there. So connect with our farmers. They're so important to our community, and we really value and cherish them.
Well, I'd like to thank both our guests this morning. Clark Harshbarger is a resource soil scientist with the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service. That's in Greeley. Also joining us, Rod Bruschi. You can hear Rod every other Thursday morning. He's one of our news hosts, but he's also a farmer and has been embarking on soil regeneration at his own farm. And we'll post pictures of the before and after soil that he brought in, two samples of that. We'll be posting that at our website, on Instagram, on Facebook, so you can really check it out. We'll have more coverage of soil as we get closer to that conference happening December 14th in Longmont. But in the meantime, I'd like to thank you both. Thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.